Our next presenter is Max Clark. His presentation is titled The Seismic Miner Location System. And Max is an electrical engineer with MSHA Tech Support at the Pittsburgh Tech Support Center over in Brewston. And I would just like to encourage you, after you see Max's presentation, he does have a booth over here with the system where he can demonstrate some of the filtering software and other things. So I think you'll really find it interesting. So please take some time and stop by there today. Okay. Max.
Thank you, Juliet. Yeah, we're right underneath of the screen over there in 900. So we have set up some sensors, and we could do real live testing over there and show you guys what we have. Max Clark, I'm from Tech Support, MSHA. So over the past 4 years at MSHA, one of the job duties I've had is to overhaul the seismic system. The objective of the seismic system is, in the event that a miner is trapped underground, okay, there's an emergency underground and all other communications are wiped out and lost, as a last resort, we use seismic to locate their position underground. So a miner would be trained to tap on the roof of a mine, and we put accelerometers or geophones on the surface of the mine, and based on the time arrival of the signals produced by the miner, we can locate their position. The system is nothing new. It's been around since the early 80s. What's new with this system is the signal processing. We now have the ability to reduce the surface noise to a factor that is minimal compared to the signal coming from underground. Therefore, that allows the seismic system to be deployed and work in parallel with surface operations. And I'll talk more about that. how we achieve this is with a few of scientific components on the surface, starting with geophones. Our geophones are fed into a digitizer on the surface, so we digitize the signals right there, and then we send them to our processing station. The geophone is an interesting device. I put Michael Faraday up there. He's one of the pioneers in electrical engineering, and one of his famous experiments is when he took a magnet and he put it through a coil and induced a current on that coil. Which is what a geophone does. Inside of a geophone, these geophones are really small. I can hold them in my hand. What they have is a mass inertia. It's a coil, and they have a magnet inside of that cylinder. The magnet is static to the base of that cylinder, and whenever the Earth moves or seismic activity, it pushes the magnet through the coil and induces a current on that coil, and we measure the voltage at the tips of that coil. So at the digitizer, we're measuring that voltage, and we digitize it. And the digitizer consists of, it's kind of like our aggregator of data. We have the analog signals coming in from the geophone. We digitize that. At each one of these digitizers, we have telemetry where we capture the data there and we send it to our computers in the field, which is typically a truck that pulls up, or we're inside of the truck and processing the data. And we have a GPS connected to the digitizer, which tells us the location. And it also helps us, it's also how we do the timing as well. Over to the right is basically what we have raw data. That's we're sampling at 1,000 samples a second, so that's 0.019 seconds of data. So at 1,000 samples a second, we're looking for low frequency signals that come through. So when we sample at 1,000 samples a second, at the high end, we can measure up to 500 hertz. and the low end is 10 hertz, which is a function of the geophones. Telemetry is what we use. As I mentioned, we have antennas at each one of these digitizers, and they send the telemetry, they send the data that we capture in the field to our processing station. And what we're using to achieve that currently is we use what's called a point-to-multipoint system. The multipoints being each of the digitizers out in the field, and the single point being our base station. And that's what our seismic truck looks like now. We're in the middle of an evolution in seismic, and the truck hasn't evolved yet. But that's the truck from the original seismic system in the 80s. And so we're operating in the unlicensed band, 902 to 928 megahertz, and we call frequency scanning, TDMA, so time division multiple access. So each one of these units out in the field take a segment of time and send a little burst of data, and they take turns. And before they do that, they scan. Since it's an unlicensed band, there's a lot of other 900 megahertz equipment out there, especially in the case of an emergency. So what it does, it scans between 900 and 928, and we're typically taking like 5 megahertz width, and it looks for the quietest area before it sends that little burst of data, and it sends it on that. And it's pretty robust. We've used it in the presence of other, many other, a lot of noise, in essence. Like I said, we're in the middle of an evolution, and the next system is going to be what we all know is a self-healing mesh network, which has advantages over the point-to-point or point-to-multipoint, and this allows each of the digitizers to talk to one another. And then once it gets to the endpoint, then that endpoint or the point closest to our truck would send the aggregated data of all the digitizers to the truck. The advantage to this, and what these triangles over here are supposed to represent, are like mountains, for example, or some type of obstacle. And so with the self-healing mesh, if you have a digitizer that goes down, it could reroute till it gets here and then goes back to the base station. Or if you're like on the other side of a ridge, it'll route to the truck. In this iteration of the network, mines are often in very remote locations where you may not have a LTE signal, for example. An LTE signal is what we use to connect to wide area networks, internet, for example, so we could send this data to be looked at in remote locations. So we'll have basically what we call 4G LTE gateways on these as well, so that if any of these on the other side of the ridge or any one of these units would have a signal, they can inject it into our system, and then we have a signal here. In addition to that, to be robust, we have satellite internet as well. This will be the future iteration. And this is where our processing station, where we process the signals. This is a look at the inside of the truck. We're looking at, here we're looking at 21 traces. We have 7 arrays in the field. Each array has 3 geophones, so when we start, we look at 21 traces. That's where we're at now. When we get to this iteration, we'll have many, many more, which one of the major limitations in our seismic system right now is the number of arrays we have in the field. More arrays, we can cover more ground, basically. The WAN communications, which is basically taking the data that we capture in the field and putting it on the internet so that somebody in the office or all over anywhere where there's internet access, they can look at the data in real time. One of the things with seismic is we don't know what the ground is underneath. We don't know what the algorithm is going to work well in that scenario. We deploy to a mine site that we're unfamiliar with, and we have to do all of this real time. So if we put this out on the internet so that the more people that look at the data, the higher probability we have of finding the signals that we're looking for, which is a miner pounding underground. The challenge is the reducing the noise, and the noise is what's called surface noise. In an emergency, you have all type of activity, trucks running, people running all over the place, and we now have the ability to do seismic at the same time all of that activity is going on. And that's the remote processing stations, and is basically any station that you have in the internet. And that's what a remote processing station may look like. We may be the people we work with. They're no matter where they are. If there's an emergency, if you're sitting on the beach here, you notice there's nobody sitting in those seats, because in an emergency that means there's somebody trapped underground. There's somebody's life is at stake. In the group of guys we work with, they answer the phones 24/7. Our phones are always on our hips, and if it rings with a certain number, we know that it's a tragedy. So no matter where we are, our guys are always there. Which leads to the time critical elements. If you have somebody trapped underground, or if any of you would be trapped underground one day, time is of the essence. You're trapped underground. You don't know the type of air that you have. You may be living off of these SESRs, rebreathable things. So us as a seismic team or as an MEO, mine emergency response team, these guys have to get out there as quick as possible. Right now we have one of these systems. It's located in Pittsburgh. Once the evolution is complete, we would plan to distribute these across the country so that we could reduce the time. But site arrival is time-critical element one. So arriving quickly is the most important thing. We're from Pittsburgh, so we have a lot of mining activity in West Virginia, so Pittsburgh is a good location. If we're out west, if the emergency is out west, then it's going to take some time. One of the things we've done in the past was loaded them onto military flights, loaded our truck on there, and flew it out there. So time-critical element two is once you get on site, you have to deploy the system. And that's a function of the number of people you have, and it's a function of the terrain. I have on a later slide a test that we did that was in a cornfield where the corn was already harvested, and it was just an empty cornfield. You can imagine that's a lot easier place to deploy than it would be in the hills of West Virginia in the middle of the woods or in the mountains of Thailand. It was one of the calls we got recently. And then time critical element three is seismic generation. So if we have a miner underground, we want him to understand at this point in time that we're in Pittsburgh, and not to pound, to keep that in his mindset, so that when he begins pounding, he's not doing it too soon and basically wasting his energy. He may be injured, so that's a time-critical element. What I referred to earlier was once we get the system complete and wrapped up and we deploy it, one idea would be to deploy it in all the MSHA offices, because it's a mobile system, and that would allow a quicker deployment. But at that time, the miners will be retrained. But for now, we're located in Pittsburgh. It's very important for them to conserve their energy before they start expelling it, pounding on the roof. We've tested in eight locations. At each one of these locations, we've had positive results. We were able to detect and locate in the presence of noise miners hitting underground. Here's some of the pictures of what some of the deployments look like. This was our very first deployment. At the time, we used a Suburban. with the seismic equipment in the back of the Suburban, and these antennas and the digitizers out in the woods, basically. That was our setup. That was in Aracoma, Williamson, West Virginia. This was Pinnacle. We had when we went to this test, we had our seismic truck didn't make it to the test. So we had to test at the test started at 7 in the morning, but this was us at 2 in the morning taking the pod off of the back of the truck and putting it onto a tow truck and then bringing that on site. But all of our seismic equipment was in the site, and we had a great test. This was 1,300 feet underground in mountainous area. This was in Lori. The thing about this specific site was this was a site that had 400 foot of overburden, and there was a 200 foot interseam mine. So there was a mine right in between us, and all of these tests were very successful. To my surprise, this is the cornfield. This was Gibson, Indiana. When we get on site, first thing we do is we deploy our seismic sensors. And the seismic sensors report back to us their position. So this is one of the first screenshots we get when we get on site. We have our guys go out each. So these are the system arrays. Right now we have 7 of them. And at each one of these arrays, we have the 3 geophones. So we have 21 geophones all together. And this is what I'm going through here is kind of like an evolution of, so this would be what a typical setup looks like. We use an auger to bury the geophones if it's a deep mine. If it's not too deep, when I mean deep, I mean 500 feet or deeper, we usually bury them to increase the coupling to the earth. You bury them a couple feet in the ground, earth is very heavy, so it becomes compact very quickly, and coupling is what it's all about. So this is a picture of basically what we would call raw data. It's the digitizer capturing the analog signal from the geophones, basically just plotting that data. This is the data from the system in the 80s up until I start working on this system, which was around 2015. And so this is with the new system, but it's an emulation of the old system signal processing. And what that did was took the 60 hertz noise and all the harmonics of 60 hertz and took that out, because one of the noises that are always in the field are 60 hertz, because it's what powers our world, and in America anyways. If you go to Europe, it's 50 hertz. So this shows the evolution of seismic from what it was. This is the same signal with the noise reduction techniques that we're using now. And you can see in the past, it would take somebody that was very familiar with looking at the signals all the time to be able to look at the signal and tell you, yeah, we have 10 pounds here. But now it's trivial that, yeah, we have 10 pounds here. And we can also see stuff that was impossible to see in the past, which ultimately means that we can go deeper with fainter signals from the miner. In addition to that, a lot of this noise here is noise that's created on the surface. So we can cancel a lot of that out. And it makes the system a more viable system. In the past, the protocol was when we're going to listen for seismic activity from a miner, during our listening phase, which may be 15 minutes or an hour, they would ask everybody on the surface to stop and to pause so that we can reduce the noise on the surface in that manner. Now we can, for the first time, we can operate in parallel with surface operations. So here, once we get down to the algorithm that reduces the surface noise, we can immediately put that on all the other digitizers. So then what we do is time difference of arrival on these signals. And with the time difference of arrival, we can triangulate the location of where the miner is underground. So this, I'll just back up here. And this is like an evolution of the data collected in the derivation of a location. We start with the digitizers on the surface. We go through noise cancellation on the signals. We apply it to all of the digitizers on the surface. And then from there, we can locate where the pounding is coming from. This picture has a lot of information in it. The cornfield is in the background. And then on top of that, we have layered the underground mine map. And on top of that, we have layered where the digitizers are located. And on top of that, we have the digitizers that were used in the derivation of the location, and then the location itself. With this picture, it gives us a confirmation that we did it right because it makes sense. For example, this one wasn't used in the derivation of the location. When you're looking at a lot of squiggly lines, and then you get down to deriving this picture and it makes sense, it gives you the confidence that you need to tell mine emergency operations to say, typically what they're doing is a sweep of the mine looking for these missing miners. But when you have proof of life in a location, then they can adjust what they're doing to expedite. You know, we got life, sign of life right here. This was the noisiest test we did. It was at the Hampton's Corner Mine in New York, American Rock Salt. This was a great test because in the emergency, we have a lot of surface noise. This was a lot of surface noise. We had trains here. We had an interstate here. And we had an interstate here that day it was being paved. So there was all kinds of noise. This is typically what we start with. This is what 21 traces looks like when you're looking at a computer monitor. And this was American Rock Salt. Again, very, very noisy environment. And this kind of shows the noise and then the noise reduction technique here. And if you zoom into this area, you can see this is the miner pounding underground. So it's kind of just to showcase the relative difference between the signal here and what we got. The most recent thing we got called out on, which was an interesting one, when you have mine emergencies, you don't know what it's going to be. And we got called to Thailand whenever those boys were trapped underground. They asked, can we use a seismic system to locate where they were? And to work with Chevron, the Chevron was going to drill the hole, and we were going to locate and tell them where to drill the hole. At the time, they had the scuba divers going in. They knew their location, but they didn't know exactly where to drill the hole because it was a map in Thailand, and it's highly probable that it wasn't surveyed very well. So they wanted to confirm that their location was correct. So we started to do some work before we went out there. We never went out there because before we went out there, they were starting to extract them by scuba diving, but we were kind of like a plan B at best. So we did some preliminary work. This is the cave entrance, and we found a road this is where the group, where they thought they would be located on the surface. We found a road that turned into a dirt road that was where our base was going to be, and then from here to where we would set up the array was about a 1,000-foot hike through the jungle. So the first thing I did was look online for the best type of bug spray I could find. So this kind of shows an elevation profile from where the cave entrance was, driving up to the mountain to where the base was. And then the last profile here is from the base to the walk to where we would have to set up the geophones. Setting these geophones, same the cave and the same with the mines. The mines, they're mined underground. They don't care where the surface is. So it's likely going to be a difficult job. We're likely going to be out in the middle of nowhere. So it's a tough job installing these things. We've done tests where we got on site and we wanted to do a test in a certain area underground. And when we get on the surface, the first thing we see is thorn bushes bigger than we are, you know, all over the place. So we have machetes, tools, and equipment to basically hack our way through so we can set up these geophones. And it's good practice because in the real world, we're probably not going to be in a cornfield. So time is of the essence. Again, this is kind of like the starting map I had to work with. I wasn't too confident that the cave in Thailand was surveyed properly. So that's where we came into play for that test. I mentioned the signal from inside of the cave. Any type of signal we can locate on, whether it's a piece of machinery or a scuba diver with a tank or a rock that he can pound on the roof. Once we get that signal, like I showed earlier, we could locate where that's at. These are the mines that allowed us to test at their site, and it's just an overview of different types of overburdens we've had. Anywhere from our Pittsburgh Brewston site, which is 100 feet deep, to Warrior Met Coal, which was 1,700 feet deep. So that's it. If anybody here ever gets trapped underground or any miner, although highly unlikely that it would be you or anybody we know, in the course of my career, it's a plausible scenario that it may happen again. It's happened in the past. So we just want to let people know that that we're out there listening if they're trapped in that nightmare. That's it.
Mr. Clark, is it possible to have an electronic device to generate the signal in the frequency that you're looking for, that you could then maybe issue to each miner and have them carry it with them?
Absolutely. That would be fantastic. As long as we have a signal, we can locate on it. And so right now and in the past, miners have been trained to create a seismic signal. And they've been told if they have access to like a crib block to pound on the roof of the mine, and so we can locate on that signal. If we have an electronic device underground that they carry, as long as that signal has the amplitude and basically we train them to hit with a thud, meaning like a low frequency, high amplitude thud. The louder, the better. Obviously it's a signal to noise, game that we play. And, if, as long as we can get that signal through the noise being anything outside of what the miner's generating, then we can locate on that. Anything else, guys? Thank you.